3, 2, 1. When the borough bought the Fifth Avenue Center last year, Assemblymember said 50% of the building would go to the school district. Former Assemblymember Don Lowell tried more than once to change that configuration and give the school district more space. Lowell isn't on the Assembly anymore, but his cause has been picked up by John Davies and Bob Coghill, who have sponsored a new resolution to give the school district enough space in the Fifth Avenue Center to house all the administrative offices. Most of the school district administrators work in Old Main School now, which, along with asbestos problems that keep parts of the building closed, also is not handicapped accessible. That's become a big problem since the federal government has notified the school district that if steps aren't taken to address that, the district could lose $5 million in federal funds. And the borough could have a financial problem of its own. Assemblymember John Davies says if the borough doesn't act soon, it could lose state reimbursement money already figured into the budget as revenue this year.
We have in our current year budget, current fiscal year budget, we've budgeted $1.8 million as a reimbursement for a portion of the cost of that building. The clock is ticking on that. We don't get reimbursed for that if we don't have significant action taken by June 30th of this year. And what significant action means is we have to have a contract out there to renovate space for the school district that DOE accepts. If we don't have that in place, we lose that $1.8 million. We'll never get it. That means that we'll have to take that out of our fund balance.
And since the borough offices can't be moved into the Fifth Avenue Center under the terms of a legal settlement with its landlord, Davey says giving the school district the space it needs is the only rational thing to do. And the idea of buying the borough administration building from Dick Fisher is looking more practical to assembly members. Under the terms of the settlement, the borough is locked in there through the rest of the century. Since rent over the years could add up to more than $8 million, Davey says Walt Johnson's suggestion to buy the building is worth a look.
I haven't actually run the numbers myself carefully, but in kind of doing a quick back-of-the-envelope calculation, it seems that we would save over the life of what we're going to have to be in this building otherwise, something on the order of $2 million. And it gives us, the other thing it does too is it frees us up from the terms of the lawsuit if we were to actually purchase it, so it gives us a little more flexibility that way too.
A resolution to give more space in the Fifth Avenue Center to the school district was to be considered by the Borough Assembly last week. Officials ran out of time before they could discuss it, but it should come up at the next Assembly meeting. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornson. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornson. Three, two, one. A new health center for the city of Fairbanks tops the borough's list of needs. It's followed by new roads in the Esther Lump service area, new street construction in the city, and an ambulance and fire trucks for Chena Goldstream Fire and Rescue. Improvements at borough schools and borough buildings are also high on the priority list. In all, the borough is asking for more than $13 million in state funds for capital projects. The borough plans to pick up some costs as well. Recreational projects, including two new Little League parks, trail equipment, and a shop for the Nordic Ski Club, and a training center for the Girl Scouts also made the list. Some assembly members wanted to give those items a little higher priority, but they remain at the bottom. The assembly also agreed to ask for state funding for economic development projects, with a native cultural center at the top of that list. The Fairbanks Development Authority's request for funds to renovate the Lacey Street Theater and build a parking garage also made that list. In all, the borough is seeking more than $9 million from the state for those proposals. The assembly also considered putting in a request for money to buy the borough administration center, but they don't know exactly how much to ask for, and some people who worked on this list objected to suddenly putting that item in and ranking it ahead of other projects which the public has already voiced support for. The list of capital projects is now off to the governor with the hope that he'll include them in his budget proposal. If he doesn't, the assembly would like the Interior delegation to pursue funding for them in the 1992 legislative session. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornson. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornson.
The two things that I probably want to do is to really start focusing on the issues that are the national issues and the state issues that are affecting public education, and to probably do a better job of informing the public about that. I think it's important that the public know more about those kinds of changes instead of just saying, yeah, we need to change. and we need to do our job of getting that information out to them.
How long have you been?
The president and the governor have both identified some goals that they have for public education. There's a lot of buzzwords and reforms that have been out there on the agenda for some time, anywhere from school choice to looking at decentralizing a school district, to improving performance in public schools. And I think the public needs as much information as we can provide them about what we're doing and how we can go about improving the system we have.
3, 2, 1. Food Bank Director Samantha Castle sought help from the Arctic Alliance for People on Wednesday. She asked the group of social service agencies to think of more people who may need food because she's getting a lot more of it.
For the last couple of years, the food bank has been averaging a ton of food a day. And for the last 2 weeks, we've been getting roughly 10,000 pounds of food a day. And that has, just in the last 7 working days, we have doubled the amount that we usually get in a month. So it is a significant increase in intake for us.
Castle says Cars and Safeway have always donated produce, dairy items, and bread, food that hasn't spoiled but has been on their shelves too long to sell. Managers at Cars and Safeway say they really aren't giving away much more food than usual, though. They suspect Fred Meyer's Grocery is responsible for most of it since the influx started when the store opened. Fred Meyer manager Dick Audette says they are giving some food away, but it's a matter of getting their ordering in line. He says the store is in a learning phase, and it'll even out. Castle welcomes Fred Meyer's support for the community with the food donations, but the food bank doesn't have a lot of room, so she's trying to drum up business by asking local agencies to look a little more closely for people who might need it.
We don't throw food away, but what I've had to do, which is the first time ever at the food bank, is to tell a vendor that we could not accept all of the surplus that they had available, and I don't like to do that. We had to reject milk yesterday because we had our freezers full and our refrigerators full, and I just really don't like to have to reject food because I know that if given enough time, we can find a use for it.
And at least one store manager says it may be a few more weeks before things even out and they can determine the real impact of the new Fred Meyer store on the grocery business here. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Last night, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Assembly approved a resolution that would give the school district all the administrative space it needs in the building. That will amount to more than 70% of the space available there. The borough had hoped to keep some of that space for its own offices, but now must wait before it can do that under terms of a court settlement. So the Assembly has agreed to use the space for the school district administration and get their offices out of Old Main School, which is not accessible to the handicapped. Paying to renovate the building and move the school district offices will be decided by the Assembly next month. An ordinance spending more than $1.6 million is up for approval. That money will cover renovations, equipment purchases, and relocation of the school district. It's in addition to $1.5 million that has already been approved to renovate the Fifth Avenue Center. If the Assembly approves this appropriation, it will have agreed to spend more than $3 million on renovations. The borough bought the building for nearly $4 million last year. 80% of the cost should be paid for by the State Department of Education under the old method of funding school construction needs. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. Project coordinator Ellen Ganley wants to look at what Fairbanks residents want and need in medical services and what they can afford. She plans a year-long study to look at the major issues in the medical community here.
The health system in Fairbanks is healthy. There's a pretty good diversity of providers. There are some big issues, though, like people who are uninsured or underinsured. We have a very stratified health system at this point. There are people who receive services through Medicaid funding, and then there are people that can afford insurance or to pay for their own services, and then there are people in the middle who either have no health insurance or have health insurance that really doesn't meet their needs. So that's one of the major issues.
Ganley says another major issue is who should have health and social service powers in the borough. Currently, that's the city's job. The Fairbanks Health and Social Services Commission applied for the $50,000 grant from the state legislature to make this study possible. Ganley says this is just the beginning of a process that will end in June with the development of a 5-year plan. What they want to do now is get the community involved in looking at the issues.
We're at the first step in the public process for this project, and what we're going to do is we're convening 4 work groups that address different parts of the health system in Fairbanks, and they'll each be meeting once a month over the next 3 months to identify issues, to talk about gaps in current services and barriers to access. And then we're hoping that maybe in the last meeting we'll begin to talk about what is that basic set of services that ought to be available to everyone in the community.
Ganley says after that, a Fairbanks Health Coalition will be formed, made up of people from the work groups and local policymakers. That group will outline goals and objectives for the health plan, organize community forums, and form recommendations. Work groups begin this week looking at services for mental health and addictions, medical and dental services, and things like home health care, adult daycare, and non-traditional health services such as acupuncturists, chiropractors, and midwives. Ganley hopes to find some small solutions for the community when it comes to providing health care services for people who don't have them now. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 1. The issue almost caused a rift at the Alaska Municipal League last week. Fairbanks North Star Borough officials wanted AML delegates to pass a resolution urging the state go back to the old system, when local governments picked up 20% of school construction costs. When rural representatives objected because they don't have the tax base to support that, Fairbanks officials softened the language somewhat, but still made the point that urban areas' needs aren't being met. Rural delegates still objected. Susie Ehrlich of the Northwest Arctic Borough says AML is a statewide organization and should not support urban areas at the expense of the bush.
If the league is going to make a statewide statement, let's make a statewide statement. Let's not make a statement on behalf of one group over the other, especially in terms of education, especially in terms of our children. And we have just as great needs as urban areas do. And I know you mean well, but I really am taking it very seriously. I'm very offended.
The resolution was voted down by AML delegates, which didn't surprise the sponsor, Fairbanks North Star Borough Assemblymember Hank Hove.
That was one that clearly divided the rural areas and the urban areas of Alaska. And they outnumber us. There's no question about it. But we did want to make the point in emphatic terms that the urban areas have some real serious problems living with the terms of HB 37.
House Finance Committee member Mark Boyer has heard about those problems, but he says House Bill 37 isn't to blame. It's the huge list of needs out there and not enough money to fund them. So next legislative session, Boyer says he'll introduce 3 bills to address that. He wants to ask voters to approve a bond issue of $750 million to pay for the priority 1 through 7 items on the Department of Education's school construction list.
I brought the issue up last year, but the timing was not right for it. Most of us were willing to let the HB 37 process for construction of schools have a couple of years go. What we didn't know then, and we know now, is that we do have this conflict of huge ongoing needs in rural Alaska and colliding head-on with huge increases in population in the urban areas, which throw us into a conflict. Last year's priority list had somewhere in excess of $300 million worth of projects on it. This year's list has an excess of $644 million worth of projects on it. Clearly, we can't meet those needs. Last year, we appropriated almost $29 million for schools. At $29 million a year, it will take us a long, long time. The math is pretty easy for someone. It will take us many, many years to take care of that $644 million worth of projects. The only way to get around it is to think in new ways, and the bond market is clearly an opportunity that's presenting itself to us.
Boyer says the bond market is as good as it's been in years, and even better if you can guarantee payment. That's what another part of his plan would do. He wants voters to approve a constitutional amendment to dedicate a portion of rents and royalties collected from oil and gas leases to pay for the bonds. The third part of his plan is for the state to cover outstanding debt for all school districts. Boyer says the administration has expressed an interest in the plan. Governor Hickel proposed something similar last year to fund economic development projects. Boyer says he expects there may be a compromise to merge the two ideas, and he'll work with the administration on that. But he says this could solve the immediate needs school districts have, and then he believes the priority-based funding program can work for both urban and rural districts as originally planned. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton.
I think attendance was down a little bit. I think that we had more registered than actually showed. I don't know for what reason. Times are tough in our municipalities, so travel expenses are an easy one to cut. Unfortunately, we think that the conference provides a lot of information for those elected and appointed officials back home to do a better job, but it still costs money to travel, and it's a big state. But attendance is probably down a little bit. We were expecting around 500, somewhere between 500 and 600, and I think we're somewhere between 400 and 500.
Three, two, one. North Pole resident Betty Rollins is a leading force behind the recall effort here. Rollins says they've managed to spread the word about the recall drive.
We are extremely well organized in Fairbanks, and 40% of the people who are signing the petition say, I voted for this team. We got to get them out of there. So there's an awful lot of support for it out there, and there's our organization, we have approximately 15 to 20 people who come to most of our meetings on Tuesday evening, and then we have approximately 180 who we can call on for different things.
Some of those different things involve asking for signatures and putting together leaflets and brochures. Recall organizers say Governor Walter Hickel and Lieutenant Governor Jack Coghill are incompetent and unfit for office and should be recalled. Rollins even prints and mails a recall update, listing activities that are planned and reminding people to send in petitions. The latest edition features a recall poem, recounting the history behind the election and calling Hickel and Coghill two thieves in the night. Organizers are looking for more than 20,000 signatures on the recall petitions, but Rollins won't say how many they have so far. She says they'll just wait until they have enough to turn it in. She does think the movement is gaining momentum now, though.
I am hearing from areas throughout the state, little villages and towns that I've really never heard of. English Bay down around Homer, I've never heard of those folks before. We have volunteers in Ketchikan, we have volunteers in Kodiak, Cordova, Ellicott, Arctic Village. These are people that are contacting us and saying, hey, what can I do? And so we're sending them a group of petitions, some of our brochures, and we'll be sending buttons, and they'll be passing them out collecting signatures.
Rollins is working on buttons now. One looks like a stop sign with the words, Stop Hickel Coghill. Another button will say, Stop the Reign of Error. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Fairbanks North Star Borough Solid Waste Manager Sean Gross says those regulations came out last month and have put selection of a new landfill location in limbo. Even though three potential landfill sites were chosen by FPE Rowan Engineers, the borough's consultants on the project, Gross says no public hearings have been held since they don't know if those sites will still work.
Rowan is looking at the regulations and how they will affect the sites, and I've asked them to kind of put the other work they're doing with regard to cost and feasibility on hold until we know how the regs are going to affect the sites we have chosen to this point. I mean, if the landfill regulations are going to eliminate all three sites, then there's no point in holding the public hearings and getting the community all fired up about something that we won't be able to use at all.
Gross says the regulations affect every aspect of running a landfill and anything that can be affected by a landfill operation. She doesn't know how long it will take to finalize a landfill site now. If the three original sites selected won't work, the borough could be back to square one.
We would have to start over again because we still have to come up with a site for a landfill. And if there are no suitable sites, then we'll have to develop justification to build on a site that doesn't meet all the qualifications, and that's a long, painful process.
Originally, the borough had hoped to name a new site for a landfill at the beginning of this month. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. A little more than 1 month in office, and Borough Mayor Jim Sampson is keeping a low profile. Entering his 37th day as mayor, Jim Sampson appears to be taking things pretty slowly. Talking with assembly members during a committee meeting last night, Sampson quietly urged support for money to renovate the Fifth Avenue Center. He's made that one of the major things he wants to take care of quickly. The assembly will consider that request during its meeting Thursday night. Sampson has also been learning the ins and outs of borough government and how federal regulations like the Clean Air Act will affect borough operations. His transition team has been looking at each borough department, and he expects their work to be finished by the middle of the month.
They're really basically trying to bring to my attention major issues that face each of the departments, issues that I need to be aware of, whether they're programmatic issues, whether they're budget issues. For example, they're looking at solid waste and where we are a little bit, perhaps giving me some guidance, perhaps pointing out some things I need to look at, be aware of in the next 30 or 60 or 90 days. Basically, not an in-depth review, but a cursory review of the programs. They're certainly not going to be recommending personnel changes or getting into that types of things, but mostly in the program area, some suggestions, perhaps recommendations for things to look at. They certainly are not going to come to me with recommendations of complete restructuring and reorganization, just pointing out some problems, and then we'll deal with them as we put our staff together.
Sampson cannot make many staff changes, but he is moving to fill one top position that's been open since late July.
We are going out. I've asked personnel to go out the first of the week to advertise for a borough attorney. That's a very important position, and I'm going to be working with the assembly and Hank Hope, and specifically as presiding officer, and we'll be putting a structure together that is comfortable for the assembly, comfortable for the administration, and to try to bring a name forward to the assembly to confirm they have confirmation powers on the borough attorney, so we can get legal staff on board.
Sampson says by early January he hopes to have an idea of who's interested in the job. Meanwhile, he continues to look at borough departments and programs. He has a few more months before he has to work on drawing up a budget to present to the assembly in April. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. In Fairbanks, I'm Ann. 3, 2, 1. Tony Smith announced his candidacy early so that he could start raising money. That's been the priority, not because it's something he likes to do. Smith says it's become a necessity.
I've been involved in politics for a number of years, and I wouldn't wish what I have to do on my worst enemy. I mean, to spend all your time calling people up and asking them for money is terrible. When I decided to run, I talked to some senators in Washington, and they said, Tony, how much time are you spending calling people up and asking them for money? I said, about 40-50%. They said, make it 70-80%. I said, what about issues? They said, well, issues are something you've done as a columnist and as a commissioner and as a person who's active in Alaska public affairs. And issues will be something you do after you get in the Senate. But right now, the key to winning the election is your willingness to call people up and ask them for money, and then you spend 10 to 20% of your time shaking hands and giving speeches, and that's what a campaign's all about. You can't defend that kind of system.
Smith says he needs to raise more than $1 million to run for U.S. Senate. He's aiming for $200,000 by the end of this year. He's the only Democrat who's announced his intention to run for Frank Murkowski's job. Former Governor Bill Sheffield has already ruled out a run for the office. Willie Hensley reportedly is still thinking about it. But since Smith doesn't know yet whether there will be a primary race, he considers Murkowski his opponent. And that means Smith's campaign theme is running against Washington.
Here I talk to people, they want to know whether there are going to be jobs, whether their kids are going to have a bright economic future, are the kids going to get educated, can they go to continuing education and prove themselves, can they afford health care, I mean, can they afford to get sick, much less well, I mean, are they living better off than their parents? I mean, those are the issues that I hear all over Alaska that people are really concerned about. What are they doing back there? I mean, the Thomas hearings was one of the most disgraceful periods that I've ever seen. They follow that with Gates. They're now beating up on some guy who wants to be, who Bush wants as Attorney General. I don't think, in my view, that any of those things have anything to do with what people are talking to me about as I go out in the campaign trail.
As far as the issues go, Smith says he believes the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge should be open to oil exploration, and he thinks it can be done in an environmentally acceptable manner. He says the federal budget priorities need to be readjusted since more money is being spent on interest on the federal deficit than on national defense, a budget he also says has some bloated areas. Smith is an Anchorage attorney and 20-year resident of Alaska. He was Commissioner of Commerce and Economic Development under Governor Steve Cooper. He's in Fairbanks this week for some campaign fundraising and for the Alaska Municipal League meeting. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton. 3, 2, 1. Details about the case against Sergio Colgan and Eric Hughes have been kept secret by the judge and attorneys involved in the Zastrow murder case. Court files were sealed after media coverage raised concerns that an impartial jury might be impossible to find. Sergio Colgan's defense attorney raised those questions again as court began today. James Hackett requested a change of venue, saying the community interest and newspaper articles about the girl's disappearance would make it impossible to find someone in Fairbanks who wasn't familiar with the case. But Superior Court Judge Richard Savelle said none of the publicity about the case contained information that would taint a jury and denied the change of venue for the second time. Colgan's trial is scheduled to last about a week. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Ann Thornton.
Three, two, one. Before the rest of the jury could be selected, 19-year-old Sergio Colgan got on the witness stand early today and talked about the murder of Kara Zastrow. Colgan and Eric Hughes have both entered guilty pleas to the murder charge. Other charges of rape and kidnapping were dropped. Hughes was going to testify against Colgan this week. More than 20 other witnesses were to be called as well. But with today's guilty plea, the details of Kara Zastrow's abduction and kidnapping won't be drawn out on the witness stand. Police got their break in the case from Colgan's psychotherapist last March, who he had told about the murder. That led police to Eric Hughes. Hughes and Colgan both then confessed to the crime and told police where they buried Zastrow's body off Chena Hot Springs Road. The 16-year-old girl was friends with Hughes and Colgan. They abducted her from the Bentley Mall parking lot on October 13, 1990, raped, killed, and buried her. A sentencing date for the murder has not been set. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton.
3, 2, 1. The court files are now open, but even they don't tell why two 18-year-olds decided to rape and kill a former classmate that Saturday evening. Before Judge Richard Savelle accepted Sergio Colgan's guilty plea to first-degree murder, Colgan told what happened that night under questioning by District Attorney Harry Davis.
Back on October 13, 1990, prior to going to the Bentley Mall, did you have discussions with Mr. Eric Hughes about committing, planning an abduction, kidnapping, and murder of someone?
Yes.
And when you went to the Bentley Mall, did you go there with the idea of abducting some female, kidnapping her, raping her, and murdering her?
Yes.
Colgan says he and Hughes were at the mall parking lot for about 15 minutes when they saw Kara Zastrow. They decided she was the target because Hughes knew her. Hughes asked her for a ride to work, but instead had her drive to the end of Cushman Street, where Zastrow's car was later found. Colgan met them there in his car. They had two guns with them, but Colgan only mentioned using them when he knocked Zastrow unconscious with one after they tied her up with duct tape. They put her in Colgan's car, drove out on the Richardson Highway, stopped at a rest area, and raped her while she was bound in the back seat. Then they tried to suffocate her with duct tape, and that didn't work. Colgan says Hughes struck her in the throat with a tire iron and killed her. They drove to Colgan's stepfather's on Chena Hot Springs Road to get a shovel. Then they buried her. Police got their break in the case when Colgan's therapist told them Colgan confessed to the crime. The therapist felt compelled to report it under the state's child abuse statutes because Astor was only 16 years old. Colgan's attorney argued that the confession was protected by doctor-patient confidentiality and that the information could not be used against Colgan. But Judge Savelle threw out that argument. The grand jury that indicted Hughes and Colgan never heard from the therapist. Information police got from him led them to Eric Hughes, who confessed and convinced Colgan to confess as well. Hughes pleaded guilty to murder 2 weeks ago and was to testify at Colgan's trial. Colgan's mother and his boss were also on the list of more than 20 witnesses. Hughes and Colgan now await sentencing, but why they did it isn't written in any court files and wasn't mentioned in court. District Attorney Harry Davis says this puts the case to rest, but doesn't answer the question why.
The benefit, obviously, of the guilty pleas is that there is finality to it. We do not have to go through a lengthy appellate process on the merit issues. So, yes, it's over. As soon as the sentencing takes place, it'll be over. Unfortunately, this kind of crime may happen again. Whatever caused these young men to commit this crime, whatever societal factors, exist still. And that's the frightening aspect of this case.
A sentencing date hasn't been set. Davis says he'd like to have Hughes and Colgan sentenced at the same time, so Zastrow's family doesn't have to go through that twice. The sentence for first-degree murder can be anything from 20 to 99 years. For KUAC News, I'm Ann Thornton.
Lunch, don't have nowhere to go with. Go to the co-op, you'll have lunch with somebody.
In 3, 2. In 3, 2, 1. Fairbanks attorney Ed Mertes was a former state senator and unsuccessful Democratic candidate for Alaska governor in 1978. He was also part owner of radio stations KFAR and KWLF in Fairbanks. His close friend, Lieutenant Governor Jack Coghill, called Mertes a patriot of Alaska, a champion of the statehood compact, and a strong constitutionalist. Coghill says Mertes' greatest strength was his consistency and his service to the community.
He was a good family man. He was a good, his strong faith, a good Alaskan. I see Ed as one of those that will go down in the annals of history as being a patriot of Alaska. He was on the Statehood Commission, which I chaired. Recently, he participated in our constitutional forum in Anchorage. I look at Ed as one of those people that Alaska is going to miss dearly because he contributed so much.
Police say it appears Mertes died of natural causes. An autopsy is being done to determine the cause of death. Funeral services are being planned for Tuesday in Fairbanks. Ed Mertes is survived by his wife Norma and their 6 children. Reporting from Fairbanks, I'm Nellie Moore.